And you're going to hear from Greg Cooper today, and Greg's our CEO of the Australian business. And when we talk about more stocks, we're not just talking about a sweeping general statement that more stocks are better. We've got not only academic but statistical proof that whilst we're not saying you shouldn't use concentrated portfolios, they're certainly not the only solution for getting conviction. And a really good example of that is the tools that we now have at our disposal as fund managers or researchers or financial planners. You can start to look through a whole range of, you know, global equity portfolios, and the terminology such as unconstrained, benchmark aware, unaware, is being used what we deem pretty loosely. In fact, there are a number of managers in the market who use the term benchmark unaware. They're unaware from a geographic perspective, but when you look through their portfolio, 95% or 90 plus percent of their holdings are all MSCI based. So we certainly want to challenge your thinking of building global equity portfolios. As I mentioned, Greg is our CEO of the Australian business. He spent the last, up until a year ago, the last 6 years working throughout Asia. He's run a major asset consulting firm in the past. So he's not only worked on the funds management side of the business, but has also worked on the asset consulting and actuarial side of the business. So please welcome Greg.
You know, I actually feel pretty comfortable up here today. When I looked at the program and started going through the presentations and saw that we were talking about more stocks in a portfolio and there were three other managers talking about how less stocks in a portfolio is better, to me, being on the contrarian side of an argument in any investment game is the place you want to be. You don't want to be following the crowd. And so, you know, in that sense, being, you know, the one house talking about why you should have more stocks in a portfolio when everyone else is saying how you should have less is actually a pretty comfortable thing. And it's interesting because when you break down the arguments that most people use for concentrated portfolios, they generally revolve around two core things. Firstly, they talk about how as you increase the number of stocks in a portfolio, you start to look more and more like the index. And when you compare tracking errors and so forth, your portfolio starts to look increasingly like an index once you go particularly beyond a certain number of stocks, be it 30 or 40 stocks. The other argument is usually a statistical argument that says, look at all the best performing managers and they're all very concentrated managers. Well, that one's fairly easily to see how flawed that is, because I could also show you charts where you look at the worst performing managers, and typically, you know, given that concentrated portfolios have so much additional volatility, you know, it's quite likely that your best performing managers will be concentrated managers, but your worst performing managers will also be concentrated managers. But in terms of the you know, as you add more stocks to the portfolio, you start to look more and more like an index. That argument is actually also predicated on two core things. Firstly, when we add stocks to the portfolio, the sample they're selecting from is the index. So what they're really saying is, as I add stocks out of my index portfolio and put them in my active management portfolio, lo and behold, I start looking more and more like the index. Well, in a way, that's not particularly surprising. But the way they're also measuring how much you look like the index is using a measure tracking error. And you know, anyone who's been in the markets for any length of time, and certainly anyone who's been running active portfolios over the last 2 weeks, should very soon realise that tracking error is not a particularly good measure of active risk versus the benchmark. So with that preamble, what I wanted to talk to you about today was, when does it make sense to have more stocks in a portfolio? And why is it that actually having less concentrated portfolios can actually be a positive thing? But before we go there, it's actually worthwhile even talking about what we mean by concentrated portfolios. So what are they? Why have they become so popular? Why is everyone except us talking about them? And have they worked? We've seen some research, in fact, and I've seen some of the presentations over the last day and a half, where again, people have said, look at the evidence. Concentrated portfolios work. Here's the managers who are concentrated, and they've outperformed by a significant margin. Let's actually widen the universe and do a proper statistical analysis and actually look at the broad universe of concentrated portfolios and see how they've delivered. And then in the crux of the presentation, what I really want to get to is, you know, what is it that we're actually trying to do? And in reality, it's not about concentration. The key thing that we're trying to do is, and the key thing that you guys want for your clients is actually managers to show conviction. And the industry is interpreting conviction to mean concentration, but it doesn't. Concentration is one way, but it doesn't have to mean concentration. So, what are concentrated portfolios? And I think, you know, this is an interesting question because, you know, you do get people talking about it all the time, but what does it mean? There is no really accepted definition of what a concentrated portfolio actually is. And simple examples, you know, if I ask the room, is a 20 stock portfolio a concentrated portfolio, or is a 30 or 40 stock a concentrated portfolio? I'm sure most of you will say yes. But, you know, is a 100 stock portfolio a concentrated portfolio? Probably would start to get a few less hands being shown at that point. But doesn't concentration in the first part actually depend on what it is the universe is, or what your universe is? So if I'm running a 30 or 40 stock portfolio out of a potential stock universe of 100 or 200 stocks, it's probably actually not that concentrated. If I'm running a 100 stock portfolio out of a potential universe of 15,000 stocks, to me that's actually quite concentrated. So what is it? How do we actually measure concentration? And you know, the graphic that we're showing here, which just shows lots of little squares representing effectively an allocation to stocks in a portfolio, it assumes we've got a 50 stock portfolio. And what you can see are two portfolios, both with 50 stocks in it. And you know, I hope if I ask for a show of hands, most of you will say that portfolio two is a lot more concentrated than portfolio one. And the reason for that is you can see in portfolio two, 49 stocks all at the same weight, and one stock which represents half the portfolio. We compare that with portfolio one, where we've actually just got 50 stocks all at exactly the same weight. If we looked at, say, you know, percentage of the portfolio that's in the top 10 stocks, portfolio two actually shows us 60% of the portfolio is in the top 10, portfolio one only shows us 20%. So we may actually even get a sense that portfolio one, you know, looks a little bit more diversified, or sorry, a little bit more concentrated than what portfolio two does. But if we look at, you know, one of the measures that's been suggested, which comes from Brandy's partners, is looking at this thing called concentration coefficient. And that basically is a measure, it's a little bit complicated, but it says, you know, what's the inverse of the square of the stock weights in the portfolio? So add up, just take your stock weights. If you've got a 2% stock weight, square that, so 0.02 squared is 0.004. And then add all those up and then invert them. And basically what it says is the lower the number of your concentration coefficient, the more concentrated is your portfolio. And you can see that in the numbers down the bottom, where clearly portfolio one is showing up on that measure as significantly less concentrated than portfolio two. And I'll come on as we go through the presentation to another measure, but that Brandy's measure was one way of actually trying to define what do we mean by concentration. Because as I said, there really is no definitions out there, and when people talk concentrated portfolios, very few people actually define what it is they mean by that. And I think that's quite important. Why are they popular? I think the biggest reason for concentration in portfolio is everyone wanting to access managers' best ideas. Active managers are really smart people. They've got lots of good ideas, you know, but I just want the best ones. So just give me your best ideas, let's put them in a portfolio, and then don't worry about all the other crap, your 10th best idea, your 15th best idea. Let's just go for the very best ones. And if I do that, and particularly if I end up paying you much the same fees or maybe slightly more, I'm certainly going to get better bang for my buck because I've only got your best ideas. I don't have this long tail of other things sitting in the portfolio. There's a desire to be different, although I'd argue right now with sort of everyone sort of piling into the concentrated route, you know, running concentrated portfolios doesn't actually, you know, make you look that different anymore. But in the initial stages, you know, everyone had sort of fairly widely diversified portfolios, so going concentrated actually was something different. We've also had a period until about 2.5 weeks ago where we had, you know, a pretty solid bull market. And one of the realities, and we'll see some slides on this in a little while, but in a bull market, actually being more concentrated can work quite well. If you're in the right stocks and they're going up the most, then you know, clearly performance is going to look very good. And the last reason, which is I think probably one that's slightly less discussed, but is actually quite important in terms of the way our industry constructed, is the use of multi-managers. And as we've seen more and more multi-managers out there, so people looking to blend managers together and blend more and more managers together, as those multi-managers have got more and more assets under management, they've got two options. They can either increase their number of managers, or they can add more and more money to the managers they've got. And the third option, which is they can concentrate their managers' portfolios. The problem with the first two options is as they increase the number of managers, then they're going to look more and more like an index by definition. If you gradually appoint everyone in the universe, you are going to be the index. If you put more and more money with the managers you've got, then clearly, you know, people might start to feel uncomfortable if they've got a couple of billion dollars sitting with one particular investment name. So the route people have gone down is to, well, let's actually appoint more managers, but if we ask all of them to run concentrated best ideas portfolios, then we can continue to appoint managers, they'll have higher tracking errors in their portfolios, and the net result is we'll still look like an active manager in aggregate, and we'll be running a reasonable tracking error. And to me, actually, certainly from the point of view of the way our industry here in Australia is developing, a lot of the reason for using concentrated more managers is actually coming from the last one. It's the aggregators looking to find better ways because they've got so much money and they don't want to keep on appointing more of the same managers. But that sort of broadly describes, I think, the core reasons why concentrated portfolios have been popular. Now let's sort of start with a bit of theory. If we go back to sort of the seminal paper done by Grinholt and Kahn, this looked at, you know, what is it that makes an active manager outperform? And they came up with this thing which sort of became known as the fundamental law of active management. And basically what it said is that your information ratio, so the amount of reward you get for a given level of risk, depends on three things. It depends firstly on the skill of the manager. It depends secondly on how widely they can apply that skill, so breadth, what's your opportunity set. If you can only make, you know, two bets a year, you might be very skillful, but it's going to be pretty hard to disseminate skill from luck over time. If you can apply your bet thousands of times a year, then that skill should start to show through. And so it applies on skill, how often you can apply that skill, and how easy is it to implement that skill. This thing they call the transfer coefficient. So you might have great ideas, but if, you know, market's not liquid enough, etc., then it might be very difficult to actually implement your ideas in a portfolio. But if we look down that formula, and we think about the things that are embedded in there, and particularly the second term there, the term of breadth of opportunity set, as we increase the size of our opportunity set and we start applying our skill across more and more opportunities, then we should have more confidence that we can generate a higher information ratio. That points you towards a less concentrated approach, not towards a more concentrated approach. You know, and as an industry, in fact, we've spent a lot of time worried about, you know, do our managers have skill or not? In many cases, particularly as you concentrate portfolios more and more, it becomes harder and harder to disseminate skill from luck. Then, you know, what we really should be doing is, if we really want to identify, you know, and we think we can identify skillful managers, then actually give them the broadest opportunity set possible so they can actually apply that skill and actually get away from luck driving portfolio returns to skill actually really showing through. So, you know, if we believe the Grinholt and Kahn work, then actually we should be looking at wider, broader portfolios, not more concentrated portfolios. So coming back, concentrated portfolios, the typical advantages, generally see higher risk, you know, higher tracking error as the measure of risk. Most of the time people have to say you take a longer term time horizon, because if you want to get a sense of skill actually coming through in the portfolio, you need to have a longer term time horizon. But typically the bets they're also taking in a portfolio might take a while to play out, so we need a longer time horizon. Or generally that's sort of flipped around and said concentrated managers have a longer time horizon. I'm not sure that's correct. I think actually all managers should have a long-term time horizon. Actually, just for concentrated portfolios, it's going to take a long-term time horizon before you can actually disaggregate skill from luck. They're pure stock selection. You're getting the best ideas in a portfolio, and that can work to your advantage or disadvantage. And not always, but typically, more concentrated managers are looking less and less like the benchmark. So they're avoiding some of the pitfalls of market cap-based investing, which we've certainly spoken a lot about over the last few years, and I think becoming more and more prevalent, this idea that investing in a market cap-weighted universe is not exactly the best way to run your portfolio. But the disadvantages, one, capacity. If we concentrate our stock calls into fewer and fewer stocks, you can actually run less and less money. Portfolio volatility, and certainly as we'll see in a minute, is definitely higher. Clearly, if we have less bets on the table and more money in our bets on the table, then you're going to have a lot higher volatility in your absolute portfolio. As we talked about, measurement of performance is actually quite tricky because if you've got a higher vol portfolio, it's much harder to discern skill from luck. And in particular, and I think this is certainly something we're going to see over the coming months, will be interesting to see how some of the more concentrated managers go in periods of more extreme market volatility like we're seeing at the moment. And I think what we might end up seeing is actually even greater dispersion in returns amongst concentrated managers. So that idea of actually a concentrated portfolio being a much higher risk portfolio really starting to show through. If we go back to the Brandeis piece of work that I mentioned early on, they had this definition of the concentration coefficient. And the way they were measuring concentrated portfolios was this measure where we take the sum of the squares of all of our portfolio weights and invert it. And the piece of work they did was actually looking at US, where we've had much longer term time series and more chance for concentrated portfolios to prove their worth. But they looked at what was the performance of concentrated portfolios like, or performance of all portfolios, but then graph those according to the level of concentration. And what you can see in the chart is, looking at the bottom axis shows the concentration coefficient, and the vertical axis shows the relative performance. And what you can see is actually that solid line running through the middle is actually a regression fit. So it's the best fit line through all of those managers' returns. And it's pretty obvious, actually, just looking at the chart. What you can see is, as you get a higher and higher concentration coefficient, so as you get more and more diversified portfolios, for one, there are fewer and fewer managers running those. But for two, actually the dispersion of returns between the best manager and the worst manager is actually narrowing. So returns are actually sort of coming in towards a more central point. But that central point, which is that line of regression running through the middle, is actually a positive outperformance. It's above zero. But it's actually dead flat. If concentrated managers really work, then what you would expect is that line of best fit should show that the more concentrated managers would outperform by more than the less concentrated managers, because that's what they keep telling us. Those best ideas are going to flow through in portfolio and you're going to get better performance. But actually what it shows, in fact, the R squared, which is the measure of effectively the error term around that line, is zero. So there is no information content in the hypothesis in this study that more concentrated portfolios delivered better outcomes. And I think one of the issues we've seen with concentration is at its extremes, actually, concentration can be enormously wealth-destroying. We saw the TMT bubble in the late 90s, which blew apart in the early part of the 2000s. And that was basically where we saw the concentration of technology stocks within the index rise from its long-term average number, which was around 10% number, to nearly 40%. And it's now fallen back to just north of 10% again. And the issue there was actually, technology was actually became a very, for anyone who was running anything that looked like the index portfolio, and certainly if you invested in an index fund, you actually ended up running a very concentrated portfolio because you had all of your risk in this one particular segment of the market. And the same thing happened with Japan if we go back even further into the 1980s, where in a global portfolio, Japan went from being 10-12% of the index to over 40% of the index. So we had this huge concentration in one part of our portfolio. And that in fact can be, you know, when we again start to think about measures of risk in a portfolio and how concentrated we are, we do actually have to be wary of the fact that sometimes our measurement yardstick, the index, can in fact be very, very concentrated in its own right, and result in sort of substantial wealth destruction when those concentrations unwind. And so really what we're talking about is the objective, when we think about concentrated portfolios, the objective is not actually concentration in itself. The objective of building portfolios, and certainly the way clients have been pushing towards construction of portfolios, is actually they want to see greater conviction, not necessarily greater concentration. And to us, conviction means backing your best ideas. It means not looking like the index. That's how you get conviction in a portfolio. Now, one way to do that is concentration, but the other ways to do it are, first of all, to drop constraints. So allow the manager to roam more freely across their investment universe. And secondly, to look for new sources of alpha, so take off-index bets. And what we can see is if we want to increase conviction, concentration isn't necessarily the only way to do that. And in fact, and as we've shown, concentration can actually, certainly statistically, has proven to be not that great at delivering a better outcome. What we should be looking at is, you know, these other ways of building conviction into portfolios. And that's where we come up with this concept of active share. This came from a piece of work done by two US academics late last year, where they sort of did this study of this concept and came up with this concept called active share. And basically what active share was meant to represent was how different do you look from the index? Because that's ultimately, when you talk about conviction, if you want people to take bets away from the market portfolio, you want to have a sense of how different do they look from the market portfolio. And broadly, active share just means sum up all of your active positions. An active position means your actual portfolio position minus the benchmark position. So BHP is 9% of the index. You know, if we own 10% of BHP, we've actually got a 1% active position. If we own 8% of BHP, we've actually got a 1% active position. We don't care whether it's positive or negative. What we've done is taken a 1% bet relative to the stock. And those portfolios that have a higher active share clearly have a lot more, or look a lot less like the index. They have a lot more off-index bets in their portfolio. And if we look at sort of some of the research that they did and what they found, I mean, just very broadly, they looked at, again, US funds because they're a much wider universe with longer track record, but they looked at, you know, how the active share of a typical US fund has changed over the last few years. And what you've seen is, on the chart looking at the 1980s, 1990s, and sort of through to 2003, the active share of managers has been basically falling. So managers have been starting to look more and more like the index. And that has been one of the issues that we've seen within our industry and the reason why people are going for concentrated portfolios, because they want more conviction. But as I said, you know, conviction isn't the only way. But certainly in terms of academic evidence, you know, we are seeing, we have seen portfolios look more and more like the index. But more interestingly, if we look at, they then broke down their research and looked at, well, you know, how good a predictor of portfolio outperformance has tracking error been, the measure that most of us have been used to looking at in terms of measuring how different a manager is from the index, versus active share. And actually in the left-hand chart, what you can see is they've sorted managers by those with the by quintile, so 20%, but the highest tracking error managers through to the lowest tracking error managers. Interestingly, the highest tracking error managers subsequently showed the poorest outperformance record looking forward. And there's a fairly, you know, linear relationship between tracking error and subsequent outperformance. So tracking error was in fact an inverse predictor of potential future outperformance. So the desire for high tracking error managers is actually fundamentally flawed in that situation. But secondly, they then looked at this measure that they had called active share, which showed difference from the index. And there they saw actually the sort of relationship you know, that we should be striving for in terms of, you know, those managers showing greater conviction, those managers having higher active share, those managers looking less like the index actually had a propensity to show much greater outperformance over time than those managers who looked more and more like the index. And in fact, if we just look at the broad universe of, you know, we've taken here just some of the funds that are out there, some of the managers are speaking today. These are all funds available to Australian investors, and actually just looked at, you know, a couple of things. We looked at, you know, how much assets do they have in the top 10 stocks, how many stocks do they have in their portfolio, and what is their active share. And what you can see on that chart is at the top of the chart, there's a couple of managers. Ignore the Vanguard Index Fund just gives you a sense of what does an index look like. So you can see, you know, an index fund actually has a very low active share. It's 0.1. And that's because index funds, you know, do stratified sampling and so forth. They don't necessarily just invest purely in the index. They do take some risk around the index. But they had a very low active share of 0.1. But what you can also see is there's managers there with 30 stocks in a portfolio, 50, 90 stocks in a portfolio, managers like ourselves with nearly 600 stocks in a portfolio. We've all got very similar active share numbers. So you don't have to have a really concentrated portfolio to get a high active share. Conviction and high active shares are about taking, you know, off-index bets in a portfolio. You don't have to do that through concentration. And our premise is that actually as you concentrate portfolios, and as we saw from the Brandy's study, you know, that can actually just give you higher volatility. Doesn't necessarily give you a better portfolio outcome. Just very quickly, and I won't sort of concentrate on this, but the fund that we mentioned at the top there is the Schroder Global Active Value Fund. Broadly, three basic premises. It's unconstrained. We don't care what countries a stock's in. We don't care what sector it's in. We'll invest anywhere around the world. And our key premise is value. Value is the one long-term investment strategy that works through time. Take a look at MSCI Value and MSCI Growth Indices, and value outperforms roughly 75% of the time. That's some odds that we're actually quite willing to take. And be global. Invest anywhere you like. No point being overly concentrated by market segment or just sticking to developed markets. You know, consider the whole world. And in fact, the universe we look at in this fund is about 15,000 odd stocks versus the MSCI World Index, which is a traditional manager's global universe of about 1,800 stocks. Broadly, what it targets, 3-4% outperformance. Couldn't give a toss about tracking error. It's an irrelevant statistic as far as we're concerned. It's all cap. It's value biased, it's unconstrained, don't care about sector and country weights, and we offer fully hedged and unhedged options. The real proof of the pudding, outperformance. And in fact, we got a plug upstairs from one of the other managers who said they didn't understand how a 500-600 stock portfolio could deliver outperformance. Well, those are the numbers, and it's delivered something like 700 basis points of annualised outperformance relative to the index. So, you know, having a very diversified approach can actually deliver quite positive return outcomes. What I think is more interesting, and I made the comment at the start about how we want to be different to everyone else, that's actually how you make money in investments. This is just a risk return chart showing 12-month risk return. You can see global active value right at the top of the scatter plot and to the left-hand side. But more importantly, if we look at this is a Morningstar analysis looking at, you know, the styles of managers you can generally invest in there, you know, blended by value through to growth, micro through to large cap, and, you know, those are the sort of the typical funds that most people use. If we take something like Global Active Value, it sits well outside of anyone else who's out there. So again, you know, being different is actually one way to deliver, and in fact, in our view, the best way to deliver quite, you know, long-term positive returns. Why has it worked? In fact, this chart here just shows you some of the investment themes that worked in the portfolio last year. You know, in a 500 stock portfolio, the thing we've got going for us is breadth of opportunity. We've got lots of things that can be working in the portfolio at different points in time, and that means that you're not driven by one particular thematic bet. You know, if you had a portfolio that's been very skewed to just one theme in investment, you know, that might be a right long-term thing, but geez, it can get awfully volatile over time. You know, having that diversified set of opportunities gives us a lot more chance to outperform. So in terms of what, weighing it up, you know, I think, you know, in terms of concentrated portfolios, focusing on the last two columns in particular, you know, we can still avoid the disadvantages of being market cap orientated by being diversified. So having more stocks doesn't mean you look like the index. You know, you still should always take a long-term time horizon, in our view. Taking a short-term time horizon is always going to lead to disappointment on part of investors. Return expectations, you know, from both diversified approaches and concentrated portfolios can be quite high. But more interestingly, the impact of an individual stock call, getting a stock call wrong in a very concentrated portfolio can be quite catastrophic to your portfolio. Clearly, in a very diversified approach, we're reducing the risk of getting any one particular thing wrong. You can run more money, so you don't have to keep a very close eye on the manager to make sure that they haven't breached some limit. You don't have to worry about, well, they generated their performance with no money under management. Now they've got $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion. How is that going to impact their performance? In particular, during bear markets, particularly sustained bear markets, we would expect a diversified approach to actually be, hold up better than a very concentrated approach. Performance is actually easy to measure because you're taking more opportunities, you're applying your skill across a much broader universe and far more often. Therefore, we should expect that skill flows through in terms of the numbers over a much shorter term time horizon, because just getting lucky on a stock isn't going to have a major impact on portfolio performance. And broad volatility should be lower because we've got a better diversified portfolio. So in summary, concentration, in our view, has been a means to an end, but not necessarily the best means to the end. The objective has really been about trying to create more active funds. You want managers to show conviction. And as an industry, we've taken this idea that concentration means conviction, but it's not the only way of getting conviction. In fact, being diversified and unconstrained, in our view, is a far better way of getting real conviction into portfolios and doing it with potentially significantly lower risk than a more concentrated approach. On behalf of Schroders, thank you very much.